Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Simple Actions Group connected with District 14 Norfolk workshop on safety in AA. I want to thank Chris and Christy and Dave for coming. I just can't wait to hear what they're going to bring to us this afternoon. Thank everybody for taking time out and coming. We will be recording the audio portion of this, so that'll be available later to everyone. There is one piece of housekeeping to offer, and that is you will see a user called Questions. I'm actually going to set up the chat so that people can only chat to hosts and co-hosts, but you'll see a user called Questions in the chat. So while the workshop is going on, while things are being presented, if a question occurs to you that you might want to ask, just go ahead and then use the chat in Zoom and chat it to the user Questions. And then after our panelists are done with their presentation, we'll probably pass the seven tradition basket, and then we'll resume with a little Q&A. And we've got a soft stop on the thing. Probably won't go more than 90 minutes, but if people need to leave, take care of yourself, that's fine. If there's questions, we'll stay and answer it. But anyway, we're gonna start on time and keep on rolling and send your questions to the user Questions. And I'll throw some seven tradition links out into the chat. And I'd like to turn it over to the Norfolk District DCM, Ebony, to lead us in a prayer and introduction.
Hey, all, I'm an alcoholic and DCM of District 14 Norfolk, and my name is Ebony. Welcome to our safety workshop. If we can have a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, give me the serenity to
accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the
All right. I'm not going to take up any more time because I know there's a lot of information, a lot of experience, and a lot of questions surrounding this topic. So it is a privilege and an honor and a responsibility, but I would love to pass this over to our first speaker, Chris W. It's all you.
Thank you, Ebony. I was getting nervous. It'll take me a minute to calm down and just know that. My name's Chris Wells, and I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. We're going to talk today about safety in AA, and I'm going to present just an introduction to the topic and kind of where it came from. And most people think of sexual predators in the 13th step when you bring up this topic. And while predatory behavior is a big part of the safety discussion, you'll hear many things that happen every week in groups around the world and could be making people feel uncomfortable. And things as innocuous as gossip, crosstalk, religious references, discussion or disdain for certain medications or medical treatments, and references to outside literature are just a few examples. You also hear suggestions on how to deal with circumstances and people that can make members and potential members, as important, feel unsafe in our meetings. I expect you're going to hear a lot about how important it is for groups to discuss and plan for situations so that when things happen, group members already know what to do and who's going to take the lead. Most people in AA got a heightened awareness of this topic in late 2014 when a CBS News show, 48 Hours, ran a piece on the death of a California woman and the circumstances of her death that led to a lawsuit against the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. Basically, a woman came to AA, met a guy, they became a couple, both of them relapsed, and he killed her. We've all known this guy. He was 20. He'd been around for 20 years. He was a chronic relapser and was always on the prowl for another woman to take hostage, preferably a newcomer. I won't go into the particulars of the lawsuit or, you know, but the woman's family essentially believed that AA endangered their daughter by allowing her to be around this guy who had a violent past without notifying her. They believed that AA should separate the criminals from the other AA members so that this doesn't happen to others. So the criminals go to this meeting over here and the other two people go to this meeting over here. I guess, I don't know. Anyway, AA's counter argument was that they don't have any control over groups or how they manage the safety of their members. And in the end, the suit was dismissed, the time for appeal passed, and AA began to have serious discussions about safety. This wasn't a new discussion, nor was it just in the United States, by the way. The General Service Board of Australia published a piece from a presentation from one of their forums in 2001 dealing with predators. This is an excerpt from that piece, and I quote, "Predators are AA members who take advantage of other members in various ways, such as sexual harassment, sexual attack, pressuring members to join a particular religious group, borrowing money, selling goods for personal gain, offering investment schemes, theft of group funds. And while they aren't common, the damage they do can be enormous. The saddest thing is this type of activity is that it's often practiced on vulnerable new members who are least able to use their judgment to defend themselves," end quote. So in 2009, the General Service Board, that's our General Service Board, appointed a subcommittee to discuss whether the board had a role in protecting potential members who were minors. This followed a Newsweek article in 2007 about a group in Washington, D.C. that was alleged to have a lot of predatory behavior towards minors. The subcommittee suggested changing the focus to how can the fellowship assure the safety of minors rather than if the board had a role. This is an excerpt from that subcommittee hearing, and I quote, "The subcommittee members agreed that the General Service Board in its position at the bottom of the AA service structure would not have a role in setting any behavioral policy or guideline for the AA groups or members in regards to protecting any vulnerable member, including minors, coming into AA. The AA groups and AA service entities such as areas and districts are autonomous and direct and guide their own affairs. The General Service Board has no authority, legal or otherwise, to control, direct the behavior of AA members and groups. The subcommittee members also agreed it was in the groups and individual members, that it is the groups and individual members that need to ensure that all members feel as safe as possible in AA, and that newcomers are provided with strong sponsorship and made aware that AA is a microcosm of the society of the world outside the AA meeting room, that they may encounter a few members who do not have their best interests in mind about getting sober through the AA program of recovery. It is hoped that the areas, district, and groups will discuss this important topic and seek ways through sponsorship, workshops, and assemblies and committee meetings to raise awareness in the fellowship and encourage the creation of as safe an environment as possible for the newcomer, minors, and other members or potential members who may be vulnerable," end quote. This discussion in the groups and districts really did not take off until late 2015, going into 2016, following the advice of counsel, citing the ongoing California litigation, the General Service Board could not have a major discussion about the topic. So it was just sort of moot from that 2007 subcommittee until 2016. The conversation resumed sometime in 2016 when the lawsuit was dropped and the time for appeal had ended. Soon after, in January 2017, the General Service Office published a service piece called Safety and AA, or Common Welfare, which sparked this conversation like none before. That service piece has since been revised. It was revised this past April. It's still a great piece. It actually has more in it. I've done 20 or so of these workshops in Virginia since 2016. I actually think I did one in North Carolina too, but and I'm excited to see this topic on everybody's radar. It's funny that it dropped off for a while, and I've seen it surging back up now. Folks want to talk about it again, so I really enjoy this topic. So I'm glad it's coming up. You may be saying to yourself that all this is fascinating, but why is it so important? It is important because we can only help people who come here and are able to stay. there are agencies in many localities who've stopped referring their clients to us because they've heard either through bad publicity or through people's stories that it's not safe here. I've had my own encounters with topics related to safety over the years, whether or not you realize it at the time, many of you have as well. We all know someone who's been 13-stepped and then relapsed. Some make it back and some don't. We've all been in a meeting when someone was disruptive in various ways. And if that behavior is allowed to continue, we've watched it harm the groups and people stop going to that meeting. I know someone who committed suicide after she stopped taking her medication because her sponsor told her she wasn't really sober if she took those pills. I have been the one to call the police because someone was violent at a meeting. I've been in a meeting where we had to stop the meeting to get an ambulance for a medical emergency. I've been part of a group that decided we were going to tell someone they weren't allowed to attend our meeting. I've been part of a group that had to decide how to deal with someone who was stealing items from the church where we met. I've been the one to interrupt the meeting to advise someone that they shouldn't discuss their crimes in AA because our communications are not privileged in a legal sense, and that any of us could be compelled to testify, and that there may be some members in the room who believe they are obliged to go and report these things. So we as a fellowship need to take this topic seriously. And I'll say this for me, you know, AA, I don't know how you were when you got here, but I was pretty broken. And I think that we attract vulnerable people who need help. And because we attract vulnerable people, we often also attract people who prey on vulnerable people. And if we don't have a legal obligation, we very much have a moral responsibility to look out for these vulnerable citizens. And it is the groups who have that responsibility, not AA as a whole. It is the group that has that responsibility. And so that's what we hope you get out of this workshop today. And I thank you all for having me here today. And I'm going to pass it over to my friend, Christy.
Thank you, Chris. Hey, everybody. Happy, happy, happy Wednesday. I really can't think of anywhere I'd rather be with you beautiful people. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Christy Ellis. And it's delighting. I'm just really grateful to be able to come and share with you today. I've had the joy of being on a panel with Chris and Dave many times to talk about this very important topic. And what a great intro. Thank you, Chris. And I'm so grateful that we are talking about it. And thank you, Dave and Ebony. And your district is always just up front and wanting to just stay up front and keep everyone educated. I'm a big believer in Alcoholics Anonymous doing that. I used to, when I first got here, we had a lot of things that we would educate. We said we'd have like events to educate the community. I was like, we need to educate AA people, you know, because we don't know. And if we don't know, we don't know. And so I'm so grateful. What I'm going to do is, you know, piggyback on what she's talked about, share personal experience. And I've got notes, of course, because there have been many, but I think it's important because that's what we do. We share experiences and then some things that that have been put into place in different situations. You know, when I was 6 months sober, you know, when I got sober, God, I was so excited to be sober. I am that person. You know, a lot of people are like, I'm like, thank God there's a way out of this hell that I never thought I'd get out of. And so I went to a dance at 6 months sober, first one sober, and somebody stole $20 out of my purse and a pair of earrings. And I was like, now it did something for me. What it did was it reminded me, as one of my dear friends says, that this isn't Well People's Anonymous, I've got to remember, you know, I'm grateful that it did not keep me from participating, you know, that early in sobriety. The reason is I had a sponsor that I could talk to about it. And I had other AA members, you know, and they reminded me of that. And so that's why it's so important to get here and include and pull people in and get them, make them part of the tribe so that they're not standing there alone if those things happen. My first home group, I was, you know, so grateful they gave me the key to the church, but I set it up alone. And when I think about that, that's not safe. You know, in my current home group, we have two people meet and set up the home group. It's not good to go do anything in AA. We do things in pairs. You know, I was so eager And being that eager person, I wasn't thinking about that. I was just grateful they gave me a key to the church because to trust me, you know. But the bottom line is that's not a safe situation to go in there and by myself. And unfortunately, nothing happened and people did start arriving. And then another, I know my husband and I were standing outside of a meeting one night. You know, it's so fun to stand outside after meetings, and that's where a lot of the great conversations happen. And we were standing there and everybody had left the parking lot. And we were dating then, and this was years ago. And we looked over at the woods and there were three people in the woods, like trying to get us to come over to the woods. And of course we didn't. All of a sudden they came out of the woods chasing us. We jump in our car and then call the police and found out that they'd been going around different places, you know, doing that. What that reminded me of is, you know, to be conscious of your surroundings. You know, even two people standing there sometimes cannot be safe, you know, but be conscious of location, be conscious of what's going on. And it's great to stay after, but do it safely. I was in a meeting in early sobriety where a guy did throw a chair. He came in, he throws a chair in the middle of the meeting. Fortunately, they had someone that walked him out. But, you know, sometimes I've seen that, some disruptive behavior happen in another meeting and nobody knew what to do, you know, because it's like people are taken back. It's scary. What do we do? So that's where it's important to have someone that can, be that assigned person to, you know, if something happens and along with that would be having a chairperson that knows how to chair a meeting. Because many times, you know, anytime in a meeting, that chairperson, you know, you want that to be a person that can handle disruption, can look to the other home group member that can take care of things, can not let someone take the meeting hostage because that's a safety thing, can maybe in a nice way, but firm, take the meeting back if it goes off track, like you did talked about, Chris, talking about things that don't need to be talked about, sharing about somebody's personal business with a name, things like, because these are things to me that people coming in, they're expecting us to not be who we say we are. They're expecting us to not keep us confidentiality. They're expecting us not to be they don't really do that. No, they're not going to. I can't trust them because I don't know about you, but I didn't come in here a trustworthy person and I didn't know anybody. And we have to gain trust. And so I need to see behavior that's going to reassure me that I'm okay and it's safe for me to be there. So the way I share in a meeting, the way I talk, the topics I talk about, attire, you know, I had a sponsee that a couple of girls that would dress very provocative. It made people uncomfortable. And once some women were not very nice about the way they asked her not to come back to the meeting unless she could dress better. Now, as a sponsor, that's, you know, we talk about sponsorship that, you know, when someone's new, you know how we are, we come in, we're broken. We don't feel like we matter. Any attention is better than what we weren't getting. And sometimes, you know, we get sexual attention, you know, to getting people to look at us can create mixed messages and then put people in a awkward situation. And that's why, you know, I do believe sponsorship is so important and recognizing that. And I have no problem saying something to someone because it's going to help them. And I also have no problem with there was a guy that was constantly in the meetings hitting on these girls. And I had a conversation with them in the parking lot. And I'm just like, well, you let them get sober. Let them get sober. Stop. Because people weren't coming back. And I get, you know, everybody needs to have a chance. And that's a safety. And I'm not going to stand by and watch that. You know, I'm going to do it with some diplomacy, but I'm not going to stand by and watch. Somebody could die just because I'm not willing to say something. I'm going to say something. And, you know, I'm going to say something. And he wasn't happy about it. But, you know, but I also had to remember he's a member too. So I had some guys talk to him. And I think, you know, I've always got to remember that even if someone's doing that behavior, that they're also a member and that they're sick. And that maybe I can send someone to talk to them because that way, you know, hopefully it can change. outside. Yeah, I've got notes here because there's so many things that I'm having. I'm a big greeter. I'm a hugger. Man, I love to hug you. But something that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is not everybody wants to be hugged. And that's personal space. And so I've learned how to kind of go in and stick my hand out and they'll be like, no, I'll hug. Okay, cool. You know, and just try to be conscious of that. You know, I can't expect everyone to be just like me. I have to meet people where they are and respect that. Some people aren't used to that and it makes them uncomfortable. So I've been standing in a circle and people didn't want to hold my hand during the prayer. And that's okay. That's okay. This has got to be a place where people can be themselves. I've had, personally had, you know, and I think a lot of us have had inappropriate remarks I can remember made to me when I was early in sobriety. I was 30 when I got sober. And it, you know, and it was a lot of guys and girls and everybody, and we know how it is on AA campus. And fortunately I had made a decision that if you wanted more than friendship, I didn't want to talk to you. So I was pretty good at setting the boundary, but not everybody is. And so, you know, and that's where I know if they're new, they need sponsors as much as I need one. If people, women do it to men do it to women. Women do it to women, men do it to men. It's people do it. It's not any gender. It's people do it. And I truly believe sometimes, and it's not up to me to analyze it, that people are just looking to feel like they matter. But unfortunately, we get here and I had to have a total 180. Thank God for the steps and what happens here with the new pair of glasses. And I'm looking at life differently. And I'm not looking at the things that used to make me happy, like they're going to make me happy, which they never did anyway. You know, and so it's, and if I can be helpful to someone as a sponsor, put those glasses on, I'm going to. I had a girl call me one time telling me that a girl I sponsored told me that I would lend her some money. Now, I'm glad she said it to me because I could handle it. But I think about it being said to a new person, putting them in an awkward position. What do I do? It's just like if I sell Mary Kay makeup. I don't even use it, never have. But I go in AA meetings trying to sell it. That makes people uncomfortable. That's not the place to sell anything. That's not the place to bring in anything from the outside. We had a girl that passed out in our meeting too and had to call 911 at the meeting. And that prompted us to assign someone in a home group that I had previously. We had a friend of mine, I walked out in a meeting one day, she was standing with a newcomer and she was like, oh, I want you to meet this girl. And I was like, great. And she, but then she said, and starts talking to me about somebody. And I said, oh, well, I was trying to like sidetrack it and say, let's not, you know, because this is a new person and they're going to hear her gossiping. And that's going to be exactly what they're expecting to hear is see, you can't trust them. And that's what we don't want to be. And fortunately I was able to get out of that situation, but you know, it's being aware of that, knowing that, those little things can really deter a person from coming. Keeping confidentiality as a sponsor, talking with, I've had girls talking with their kids in the car about stuff their kids don't need to hear. Things like that, you know, to me, that's safety and that's war for the children. Closed meetings, you know, if a meeting's closed, it needs to be closed. Because that's a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief going to that meeting, expecting it to be closed and it's open. And then they run into a patient or a child or a teacher goes and there's a child that goes to her school. Then all of a sudden goes back to school, is telling everybody, hey, I saw my teacher in an AA meeting. So to me, that's safety, dissent, which I always had to look that up, not imposing my opinions on others and thinking I know all the answers. That can make someone feel threatened and like they're not doing it right. And that I don't have the right to do that. I do not have the right to do that. The seventh tradition to me is a safety thing. It's helping other people understand what that means. What is the seventh tradition? Making sure we're reading that before we pass it so that people understand. Why do we do that? You know, why do you want my dollar? Where's that going? Special needs and accessibility. Having, you know, access on Zoom. There's loads of etiquette and things, you know, we all know from the pandemic, being safe on Zoom, but safe in meetings, you know, making sure someone that has special needs or that it's accessible for them so they feel safe when they're in there. Having someone, if someone does come in a wheelchair, a home group member that's available to help them out, you know, doing a 12-step call, making sure two people go. That's safety, you know. And I remember hearing about sponsors that would get sponsees to cut their grass and all that kind of stuff. And I would be like, what? And the truth is, there were people that did that. That's another safety thing to me. Wait a minute. If I get that person to sponsor me, that means I'm going to have to do all that. And looking at, you know, thinking about spiritual attraction versus sexual attraction, how, you know, come in and you're bright eyed and, ooh, that person's like this, you know, falling in love with the speaker at the conference. And, oh, my God, I've got a crush on him and all. And it's just it's being blown away by that spirituality and not mistaking that. And that person that is exuding that or is that person not taking advantage of that. Because I have seen that happen, unfortunately. Spirit of rotation and service work and in your home group is really a safety thing. So no one's in charge, that this is about level playing field. Everybody has an opportunity to serve. Doesn't make anybody feel, it makes everybody feel like they're part of the deal. And it makes them feel comfortable and that they belong, that nobody's, you know, the leader. I mean, I know there's certain leaders, but not in that way. When we have, we're introducing ourselves and, you know, being available, showing where things are. If a new person comes to our home group, that's what we do. We have greeters that stand there and we show them, this is where the coffee is. This is where this is. This is where this is. If it's a female, we introduce them to females. If it's a male, we introduce them to males. We also have sponsor liaisons. So if someone's looking for a sponsor, we say that during our, format, and the female will stand and the male will stand, and so that they know who to go to, and that we used to say anybody available, but they can't tell. And it's so much, we felt like it was better to be more intentional. And there is a safety piece with that as well, where they would feel comfortable. And we also look to see who that person is so that liaison can go over to them. Clicks, being really conscious of that. In my home group, we try to not sit, we were sitting together, it seemed like a lot. And we have a lot of new people that come to our home group, so that, you know, all of a sudden it looks like a click sitting together, even though we don't think it's a click, but it's perception. So we move around and make people feel comfortable. And even in our having new members in our business meeting, making them feel safe and comfortable to have a voice. Having a voice in Alcoholics Anonymous is super important to me. And that's, you know, making sure, you know, that they know that they do that. And that makes them feel like, okay, I do matter. And I'm just about done. Those are a lot of situations that I've had. What I did want to say is that before I close, I wanted to mention that there's a survey of three questions that this, along with a lot of other resources with safety resources, are in a, I'm going to put a link in at the end of this and you can access it, and it'll give you all of the resources. I put them in a Google Works thing. And so everybody will have access to them. And this ensuring safety in meetings it's a nice survey. It's got three questions. One is, how can we make our home group a welcoming and accessible place? Two is, how can sponsorship and keeping our AA meetings safe? And three, in keeping with traditions, how would or does my group address matters that may arise, such as conduct that disrupts the meeting, illegal activity? As Chris said, we're not immune from that. What are you going to do if somebody walks in with a gun? I did put a resource in the Google Drive that talks about what to do if that happens. Inappropriate behavior towards vulnerable new members. Who's going to take care of that? Who's going to make sure that that's not happening? Emergencies, injury, accident, fire. I mean, do we have a first aid kit? We do. We have a first aid kit. you know, a little child gets hurt because we have babysitting, you know, be really looking at our group and making sure that if anything happens, think of any possible scenario happens, are we equipped to, and do we have a plan to take care of it? And that's the bottom line. On the survey, it's got a lot of the things that I talked about that you can talk about in your group. And lastly, Bill said in his essay on the first tradition, no AA can compel another to do anything. Nobody can be punished or expelled. But what we do is we don't sacrifice the group for one person. And it is up to us, you know, to take care of, you know, we don't let people take it hostage. I've listed a lot of different ways that I've seen and experienced safety. And, but what we do is you can't act, you know, sometimes it has to be like Chris said, you can't come back here. Or we had someone, we said, you can come back, but not if you act like that. And so, you know, we all have to look at each situation, but the bottom line is, you know, without you, there's no me, as Liz Bailey always said. And I love that. And so we really need to take care of each other. We need to take care of Alcoholics Anonymous. We need to take care of our new folks coming in. We need to take care of our folks moving to new places. We need to take care of each other because we're all on this path together. And so I hope you'll enjoy the information and I hope you make it a great day. Thank you. And I'm going to pass it to David.
Thank you, Christy. That was great. Thanks, Chris, also. I'm grateful to be here and a member of this panel. The three of us have done this four times now, and I have a big old folder of stuff, but I'm just going to talk about, I'm not an expert on this subject by any means. I listen intently to Chris and Christy because I learned from them. And I'm just going to talk about my home group and some things that have happened there and how we have dealt with them. I'm a member of the New Day group in Virginia Beach. We have over 40 meetings a week now. So when it started, I was a newcomer. The group fractured off from another group that lost its meeting place. And it was a cubicle business a couple of AA members owned. And they had the 7:30 a.m. meeting there. And I started going there when I was new. And then eventually we took it over from them. We took that space in a strip mall right next door to the bar, Footer's Bar. And you got about a 5-foot space between the doors to make a choice every time you show up. But, we took it over. We started having more meetings and more meetings. But we made a conscious decision to be one group. We didn't want to be a clubhouse. We felt there were safety issues involved, really some of the things that I'm going to get to, as well as, you know, clerical administrative things that you have to do if you're going to have a clubhouse. So we wanted to be one group. Now that brings its own set of challenges, having that many meetings, because, you know, a 6 a.m. meeting and a 9:30 p.m. meeting have a different flavor to them. You know, or the 6 a.m. people are up, you're just getting up, there's hope for the day, they're in a good mood. You know, you go to the 6 p.m. meeting, people are coming off work, they're not real happy. They might have had a fight on, you know, with a loved one or whatever. And the tenor is usually a little different. But I love them all. I go to all of them. I admit that, you know, now that I'm older, I usually am in bed by the time the 9:30 starts, but I've still gone a couple of handfuls of times, usually to give out a medallion. So over time, I've been to a whole lot of business meetings. Again, you get a wide variety at this group because we have all these meetings all day long, which is great and I love. So the three major topics of our business meetings over the years have been keys, the opening script, and personal behavior, all of which fall under safety, really. I want to start with personal behavior. We have tried to legislate it. We have put it in the script. We have put signs all over the place. None of that works. Myself included, you know, I see the sign once and then I just ignore it, you know, or I hear it over and over. Sometimes it sticks, sometimes it doesn't. And you know, I'm, what's the word we use for alcoholics? Not nonconformist. Anyway, I don't like to follow rules. So, really, it's the chairperson and the elder statesman in the group, the folks that have been a while, have to lead by example, just like we talked about. We have a chairperson's workshop for our group at least once a year. And we, you know, we talk about these things. You have to have a certain amount of time to coach, to chair by yourself. Before that, you can, after a certain amount of time, but when you don't have enough to do it by yourself, we have a co-chair, either your sponsor or somebody who's been around a little while, co-chairs the meeting. The chairperson is the number one person that has to coordinate any problems in the meeting, let's call it that. So with personal behavior, I'm gonna tell about one guy in particular. We've had, you know, one thing is, you know, we are sick people, like Christy was pointing out. If I'm in there and I'm in a good spiritual place and people are shooting spitballs across the room or rubber bands, or, you know, it doesn't bother me. But if I'm in a bad space and somebody spills a cup of coffee by accident, it upsets me, you know. So I do have to check myself in these situations as well. But we had a fella that, you know, he was sick. He came to us. He was very disruptive. He cussed a lot. He was somewhat threatening, not physically, at least at first, but verbally. I sponsored him 3 times because he fired me 3 times. But, you know, I loved him and I wanted to help him. And so the group, he was the number one topic of the business meeting for about 2 years. And I was the chair of the group at the time. And I stood up for his right to be there, that we're all inclusive, never exclusive. And people wanted to run him out. But we didn't. But after 2 years, he jacked up a lady in the back room. I couldn't excuse that. And the group, we banned him from the meeting. We didn't ban him from AA. We can't do that. But we did ban him from the meeting. We sent him a registered letter that we'd call the police for trespassing if he showed up. And he didn't come back. Now, I was in contact with him here and there. And we were willing to let him come back if he showed change, you know, but that didn't happen, unfortunately. But that was a very contentious time for the group. And you know, we lost a few members, I would say, during that time. And so the first tradition says that, you know, unity is our most important thing, that personal recovery depends on AA unity. And a lot of people were saying that, and I learned that through that experience. If one person is threatening threatening, then they don't belong. We try to talk to them, we try to help them because we are all sick. So that kind of leads into the key situation. So, you know, since we have a space in a shopping center, we have keys. And it became somewhat of a status symbol to have a key. Right. You know, people had keys. They didn't really want to open up and sit, make the coffee or clean up. They just wanted to have a key because they had been around a while. And what Christy also said, that the 6 a.m. meeting, unfortunately, a couple of times people showed up to make coffee by themselves. And there were people in the room that had been sleeping there and, you know, had not left the night before. And or maybe the back door was left open. A number of different things could happen. And that's scary, you know, to walk into a dark room and there are people there. So like Christy said, we try to get 2 people to be there. We haven't had that problem for a while, but, you know, doesn't mean we won't. And so then the script I've already kind of talked about, you know, we have about every 2 years, we have to reduce the script because we do keep adding to it and then we take it out. Yeah. But we do have a shortened version of the green card, the blue card, and the yellow card all in there in our script. And And we also have, you know, in our workshops on chairmanship, we talk a lot about it's difficult to have, you know, an assigned person as a greeter or assigned person as the emergency person if somebody has an injury or the police need to be called, because there's 40 meetings. It's just difficult. But the chairperson, again, is in charge of that. And usually, you know, we're alcoholics. There are lots of people that want to be in control when a situation like that erupts anyway. So, but it's good to have some guidelines too. I was talking about the script, but I lost my train of thought, so I'm going to move on. Next up is animals. Everybody loves their animals. I love animals. But there are a lot of people that don't, or that are scared of animals and are allergic to animals. And we've had, you know, cats, dogs, guinea pigs, other animals at our meeting. And one comes to mind, and this was a service dog, and no doubt about it. And the owner was in a wheelchair. But when we handed out the chips, that dog hated it. And it would bark and growl. It never did anything, but it did scare some people. But we didn't do anything about that. She needed the dog. But it's just something to think about, that we allow service dogs. But, you know, I've seen people leave the meeting when people came in with it. Responses to sharing. So people will share, and we've had some people over time that have started to say, good share, great share. Well, you know, if I got something on my heart that is difficult to share, I'm probably, you know, not going to put it out there if I'm not going to get a good share or a great share. I feel like I have to share something good when I really need to share something else. So we've had to talk to those individuals as well. And just, you know, enthusiasm is great. I mean, that's what attracted me here, and it keeps me in service as well. But we have to be careful about how we respond when people talk. Active drinkers. Like I said, we're next door to a bar. And on Friday and Saturday night, there's a band in there, and the wall is thumping, and, you know, there's a good time going on next door. And not only that, we've had active drinkers at all times of day, and we've had people have seizures. I mean, I was in there 2 months ago and it happened. And we, you know, we called the ambulance, and they came and they helped the person, and the meeting went on. And that person came back. I've seen them since. One night I was there, it was a Saturday night. I was sitting on the back couch, and this fella comes kind of busting in the middle of the meeting. He's got a sandwich. He sits down next to me. He's eating that sandwich. And I said, hey, how you doing? He smiled at me, shook his head. And about 3 minutes later, two bouncers from next door come in looking for him. And so we all went outside, and I went out with him. Evidently, he had walked out on his sandwich and not paid for it. And so I paid for it and talked to the guy a little bit, and we went back in, and he ended up getting sober. And he's had a couple of relapses, but I've seen him again, you know. So you just never know, you know. I mean, this is all about it. Talking to people, you know, and listening. Really, it's more listening than talking. But, you know, sometimes we have to talk to set a few boundaries, right? And so, let's see. Christy talked about finances and borrowing and mixing business and AA. I learned early when I had some car work done that wasn't a good idea. And so I generally don't do that. You know, if it's somebody I've known a long time and I trust, I might do a little business with them. But typically that's outside. Making the meeting place attractive and comfortable. We're not in a church. That's very attractive to them, especially when they're new. We have couches. We have chairs in the middle. It's a comfortable place. We do try to meet the newcomers when they come in, show them where everything is, you know, ask if they want a phone number. You know, if there's anything we can do to help them, you know, and that's hopefully for anybody. I know that's what kept me coming back, you know, is that people asked me to come back. Nobody asked me to come back for a long time, you know, you guys did. So I'm going to do that too. let's see, sponsorship and being good stewards and good examples. We've kind of beat that one into the ground, but that's what it is, you know. AA has saved my life. It's given me a life I didn't think I was capable of living, you know, and I want to share that with everybody, you know, the people that, you know, the people that want it and the people that I may think they don't want it, but I give it to them anyway. And, you know, hopefully we plant some seeds, you know, because everybody's capable. And these aren't problems with newcomers, you know, these are problems pretty much with communication, you know, and setting good examples and try to keep it on a spiritual basis. Love and tolerance is our code. One of my sponsors told me, you know, tolerance isn't about tolerating people, because if I'm tolerating somebody, that means that I'm above them, you know, but I'm going to tolerate. Tolerance is more like, I don't know, if you know anything about tools or measurements, there's a certain latitude or tolerance on those. And I think that's what we're talking about there. You know, we're all supposed to be all inclusive, never exclusive. Everybody that says they're an alcoholic has, you know, deserves a seat. And then again, you know, some of these people we might say are 13th steppers, they're sick too. And Christy was saying that as well. And we need to pray for them and see if we can be helpful to them as well. But we do pretty much have an unwritten policy. If we see some of that going on, we just insert ourselves, right? And just start talking, you know, kind of split them up and start talking to them and do what we can do there. So I think that's enough out of me. I really appreciate being here. Thank you all again for having us.
Thank you all. Thank you, Dave. I'm going to allow everyone to unmute and say thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Hey, since this is being recorded, is there any way that this can be sent around to our home groups? So I'm the only one from our home group here, and I think we could benefit from seeing it. But I'm realizing that everybody's face is on here too.
Yeah, we'll get an audio link out to everybody. I'm gonna mute everybody, and if you got questions, throw them into the chat for the user questions. We've got about a half a dozen so far. But yeah, we'll get the word out on a link. It'll probably be on the simpleactions.net website. And we're just going to share the audio, and maybe we'll put a document out there with some links. Some people are wondering about one of the first questions was that piece of literature that Chris was reading at the beginning. I don't know if that was a culmination of different literature or if that comes from a document, but I put some links out there in the chat again for the seventh tradition. Anyone can sign up for emails at the simpleactions.net website. We have a PayPal and a Venmo, as well as District 14 has a PayPal account. I know that our home group and District 14 both contribute to excess funds to the rest of the service structure, like the Virginia Area Committee and GSO. So,
David.
Yes.
May I mention something?
Please.
Well, there were a couple of things I thought of there now or day. And I just like to mention that, like in our home group, we had to put in there asking people not to get up and move around a lot. And that can be, and also cell phones, texting. And we have it in our format as well, because we've actually had people take phone calls and they go in the hall and you can hear it, have to ask them to go outside if they have to take a call. We know life happens, but there were a couple things that I meant to mention that are now or day, and I see it everywhere, but that can make people feel uncomfortable. It's disruptive, and talking during meetings when people are sharing, things like that. So I just wanted to mention those things.
Awesome. Could you guys talk a little bit more about and maybe tradition one that Dave mentioned is really the answer to this, but where does tradition three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and I'm thinking specifically about disruptive types of behavior. I know we can't kick anybody out of AA, but we can kick people out of our groups, right?
I can talk a little bit about that, Dave. I think
Thank you.
I think what we have to remember, you know, tradition three says that, you know, anybody can come if they have a desire to stop drinking. But tradition one is where it really takes over when someone is being disruptive to the rest of the group. We can't sacrifice the entire group for that one person, or nobody gets sober, right? So we have to weigh the options. And these kinds of decisions I find are best made in group consciences. So if you're having a problem with someone's behavior in the meeting, someone's being disruptive, I mean, short of they throw a chair at somebody, then we need to call the police. That's assault, right? I mean, if you break the law in the meeting, that's one thing. But if somebody's just cussing a lot and you've talked to them and it's not helping, or, you know, they're stalking somebody, and, you know, whatever, it's not necessarily illegal, but it's certainly harming the group. I think the group conscience has to decide how to handle that person. And often what, you know, if you read the safety pieces, there's some discussion in there. There's also some references in the back of that refer back to some articles in Box 249 that talk about, you know, how to handle disruptive members. But a lot of it is the group needs to decide how to handle the disruptive member. And in most cases, what we would do is say, I'm sorry, but as long as you're behaving this way, you can't come to this meeting. I'm not kicking you out of AA. You go find another meeting to go to, and I hope you do. But you can come back here when you feel like you can behave and you know, live up to the group standards, the way we conduct ourselves in this. That is what I would
say. Thank you. And Chrissy, you gave so many practical suggestions. And one of the things that our home group that came out when we did an inventory was, hey, does your group have a policies and procedures document on safety? And we all just kind of looked at each other like, they have that? Is that a thing? So I did put our email out in the chat, info@simpleactions.net. If anybody has such a document, I would love to have a look at it. But how do we develop that? Is that also a group conscience exercise? Any tips and tricks there on a practical level? Could we develop that? Christy, Dave, Chris, anybody?
I would think, it just makes me think about our home group, that we actually have job descriptions for every position, which kind of falls in with that. And then, you know, having, you know, and then I think you're talking about when different instances happen about how to handle them, having one document. And I think that would go right along same. And with that was a group, we kind of had a little committee that got together and did that and then presented it to the whole group, kind of an ad hoc thing. So that's how we did anything like that, got, you know, some, and got members to do it that weren't always the one doing it. You know, getting some folks that weren't the ones always doing it, you know, getting different voices, and which I loved. And so, that's what we would do. I got a feeling, I've got a home group member on this call that is going to probably suggest that we do that. So that's what we would do, just like we did with their job descriptions. And it's helpful. Even the job descriptions helps, because people will take a position, read it before they even say yes, that they'll stand for that, and then they take it. They know the expectations, you know, and so because, you know, a lot of time, anyway, we all know there are different scenarios that can happen with that, but it's been very beneficial. So that's what I would suggest is, you know, like we did at our home group, always including everybody.
Because the more that you look into this, the more you find there's just some practical things that just aren't considered, like a first aid kit.
Yep.
Narcan. Yep. Who knows CPR? Who's the person who calls 911?
Right.
Yeah. Et cetera. And these are all things that should be fleshed out. And yeah. So.
And one thing.
Go ahead,
Christy.
I was just going to mention one thing we didn't talk about is when we've had this happen at my home group was someone that was too drunk to drive home.
That's actually one of the questions.
And I was, and so we, so a couple of us, it was a lady. So a couple of us girls, I followed, she drove her home and I followed her. And so it's just having, you know, that can happen. It does happen. It's a reality. People do come and aren't too intoxicated. Another time someone said they were at a meeting and they called the police. I don't know that I want to do that, but I was happy to, you know, that's, but that is something that, you know, my experience with it is just that we she drove her home and I followed her. Yeah.
And I was just going to mention the one thing, and Christy touched on it, but considering that your safety, whatever you decide to do, to help with safety should follow if you're doing an in-person meeting into the parking lot after the meeting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even outside of meeting times.
Yep.
'Cause that's often when predators in particular will, you know, they're not going to, you know, hit on somebody in the meeting where there's all those other people. They're going to go out there and try to talk to that young lady or that young guy when they're getting in the car.
Yep.
And so, you know, think about who is going to be the person this month or this week or this year that's going to, you know, be that person that sort of keeps an eye on the new folks while they're coming in and out of the meeting.
That ties into a specific question that was submitted, and I'm just going to read it verbatim. We have a men's treatment center, and they bring the guests to the meetings, but it's usually 40 to 50 men. Those meetings tend to lose all women attendees, and the home groups are pretty small. Any guidance?
Not sure I understand what the question is.
Can you read it again?
It sounds like there is a men's treatment center nearby this meeting, and the treatment center brings the druggy buggy, it brings the people who are in the men's house, and they usually bring like 40 or 50 men. And it sounds like that group is experiencing women not attending the meeting anymore, and the home group is getting smaller and smaller.
If there is a men's meeting in the area, I would suggest to the treatment center that they start going there, or maybe start a couple of men's meetings so that to take some of the burden off of the other meetings, so that the, you know, the home group can still have their co-ed meetings, as you call them, but, you know, have some men's meetings just for that, so that treatment center can attend.
I'd also say consider, if women used to come to that meeting and they've stopped coming to the meeting, did the women stop coming because they felt unsafe at the meeting? And if so, what could you do to heighten your safety so that maybe they felt safe to come back? I know guys think that we like to be hit on. We do not.
Nope.
And this does not flatter me at all.
I've seen it the other way as well. You know, with the, you know, these women hitting on young, cute guys.
Yeah. Again, it wasn't me, but yeah.
Right.
So someone has put a direct message to me, and I'm just trying to honor them asking me this. Would you please put it out there? AA is a 12-step fellowship rather than a 13-step, passing it on. And I'm just passing on a message from someone that's listening. I just wanted to honor them asking me to do that.
And I see that Christy just put that Google Drive link out with all this literature that we've accumulated. And that would also be a good place to start if you're going to put together a safety manual or a procedures manual, or maybe even a service manual for your group with that as part of it.
Yep.
Thank you.
And using the three questions, that survey's in there as well. I know I did that with my home group, the one I'm a part of now. And it needs to be revisited. I think really in group inventories, if you do those, you know, we try to do that like every couple years, because it's not going anywhere and there's always new members, and we need to smash that thing of it's about predatory behavior only. It's about inclusion. It's about people feeling safe. It's about everyone, you know, being able to get sober safely.
Thank you. Everybody, if you got questions, please just chat them to the user questions, okay? We're trying to curate them. I have one in here that says, could we have your thoughts on how to handle someone who is making comments or threats of self-harm?
I would suggest that they get some professional help. I wouldn't do that in the group. I would pull them aside. And I think that's part of what we're talking about here, right? When we're talking about having a safety plan, what we're talking about is having a plan for in your group. If that's a young man, that maybe there's a man in your group that has some experience with that, that you guys could talk. If it's a young woman or an older woman or whoever, maybe there's a lady in your group that could speak with them and suggest that they get help. And that's way outside of what we are equipped to handle, yep. Right? And I think that part of what we have to do as members of Alcoholics Anonymous is do not attempt to handle things that we are not equipped to handle.
Well, and you know, you go to meetings where they call for a burning desire, and I've heard a lot of meetings where that's morphed into if you're thinking of harming yourself or harming others. And I always wonder, like, what do you do about that? I mean, if you're going to ask that question, why are we asking that question? And what are you going to do if someone answers that question?
Right. I have a burning desire to win the lottery.
Well, and David, it's something else that I, you know, thought of and with the home group is your home group list with phone numbers. We ran into an occasion a couple years ago about a gentleman that joined the group and then was using the list to use the numbers to contact the women on the list. So it's, you know, that's can be uncomfortable. And then we've also had members of our group get in touch with other members on Facebook. And I mean, I know we're powerless over some of it, but maybe talking about it in the group, you know, lets people know, you know, about the, you know, confidentiality. And so we have a GroupMe text, you know, app. Most people are familiar with GroupMe, and that's our home group has one of those, and that works really well. And that's how we all communicate.
Thank you. Okay. I just had one more come in, and it's not edited yet. but we're down to our last question here. If I see a guy, I'm just going to read it. If I see a guy hitting on a new woman and I'm the only woman there and I'm trying to get her away from him, what as a lone woman can I do?
Ask a man to help you.
That's exactly where I was headed. Yes.
You do a two-pronged approach, right?
There you go. Split. Yep.
That's what we do. Exactly where I was headed.
All right. Well, that's all the questions that we have. I wonder if any of you three have any parting words for us, or this has been absolutely a crammed hour and 6 minutes of fantastic information and stimulating discussion for us to take back to our groups. And I thank you all for it. Any closing thoughts?
Thank you for having us. I had a great time.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thanks. And, you know, if anybody wants to talk to me about anything, Dave knows how to get a hold of me.
Same.
Or you can chair at aavirginia.org.
And my number's on the men's room wall. You can find it there. Or get a guy to help you find it there.
Dave has my number too, if anybody wants to talk. Beside Chris's night. Now, it's also on the men's wall beside Chris's.
Yeah. It's right there. We're all there
together. Mark H, ADCM from Norfolk, Virginia. I wonder if I could put you on the spot to pray us out of here.
Okay. This is Mark, alcoholic.
Hey, Mark.
We're going to close the Lord's Prayer. Who put the breeze in the trees?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever.
Amen. Whoop, whoop.
My beautiful people.
Thank you all.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.